Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. Advocates are urging the city to reconsider its plans to clear out Humboldt Park's homeless encampment. The company that oversees the city's migrant shelters is being accused of mishandling private information.
I think it's important to like pay respects to where we come from.
And a coffee shop that adds a touch of Mexican flavors to their coffee and baked goods. And now to some of today's top stories. A federal judge is rejecting a plea deal between Boeing and the Department of Justice. The aerospace giant had agreed in July to plead guilty to a fraud charge stemming from two crashes that killed 346 people. Under the plea agreement, a Boeing would have faced $487 million in fines, a fraction of the nearly $25 billion that families wanted the company to pay. In a statement, an attorney for the family says no longer can federal prosecutors and high-powered defense attorney craft backroom deals and just expect judges to approve them. Boeing did not immediately respond to a request for comment. And the family of a woman killed in her home by a Sangamon County Sheriff's deputy is protesting the officer's potential release from jail ahead of his trial. Sean Grayson has been charged with first-degree murder in the fatal shooting of 36-year-old Sonia Massey back in July when she called police for help. The incident that drew national attention was captured on body cam footage. Grayson is expected to be released from jail ahead of his trial after an appellate court ruled the prosecutor's case was not strong enough to meet the bar for a detention under the Safety Act. Advocates for Massey rallied today at the state capitol, calling for the Illinois Supreme Court to weigh in.
This is a bastardization of the Safety Act. I think the Safety Act was enacted to keep low-level criminals who could not afford a bond that was set to allow them to get out on bond. That wasn't for a... This guy has been charged with three counts of first-degree murder and two more felonies.
Grayson has pleaded not guilty. And Chicago's Office of Reentry, aimed at helping those returning from jail or prison to rebuild their lives, is getting a new leader. Mayor Brandon Johnson today celebrated Joseph Jojo Mapp, who has been leading the office since September, according to records. Mapp served more than 26 years in prison after being convicted of murder and armed robbery as a teen before being released in 2020. He earned his bachelor's degree from Northeastern University and worked for Precious Blood Ministry of Reconciliation, an organization that helps victims of crime and those who have been incarcerated while providing programs for youth. Mapp says he wants to serve as a bridge between community organizations and the city.
Keep in mind that reentry is not only for those leaving prisons, jails, and detention centers or who have been directly impacted, but also for our communities. It is not only incarcerated individuals who are impacted. Whole families and communities tend to suffer.
According to city data, the roughly 10,000 Chicagoans who return home after serving time in jail or prison each year are significantly more likely to become victims of crime or face homelessness than other residents. And Chicago firefighters were passing out smoke detectors and fire safety information to neighbors on the southwest side. It follows a fire in the area this morning that killed one person. Fire officials were at the site conducting a post-fire canvas. They encourage you to check the batteries in your smoke detectors, keep safe heaters, keep space heaters away from furniture, and not use ovens to heat your home. Up next, concerns over plans to clear out Humboldt Park's homelessness encampment. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
Advocates for the unhoused community are not in favor of the city's plan to clear out the Humboldt Park encampment. Last month, alderperson Jesse Fuentes of the 26th Ward, along with city officials, announced the proposal to remove all tents from the area before the holidays as part of Humboldt Park's encampment housing initiative. The city plans to start removal tomorrow morning, but advocates want officials to reconsider and explore other options. Joining us is Ali Simmons, senior case and street outreach worker with the Law Project at the Chicago Coalition to End Homelessness. Now, we also invited the area's alderperson, Jesse Fuentes, to join us for this conversation, but she declined. Her office provided us with a statement, which we'll get to in a moment. Ali, thank you for joining us. I want to start off, what are your main concerns about removing the encampment in Humble Park?
The main concern is, there's a pattern being displayed by the city of shutting down, public spaces where individuals who have nowhere else to go can no longer access. That's the main concern. And, without somewhere safe to go, then, what's the option for them?
So, Ali, you mentioned patterns, and we've seen situations like this before with the homeless encampment in Rogers Park being cleared out. So you're saying that this is something that you often see?
We're seeing more of it now, yes.
Would you say there is positive results from that?
I can say that there are positive results from it in that some people have gotten housed, but, the downside is a lot of people who are in these encampments aren't getting housed, and then you're closing these spaces down permanently so that anybody else who's experiencing homelessness or may experience homelessness in the future cannot access these spaces.
And let's talk more about that. What services could this removal disrupt?
It removes services like access to social workers. It stops folks, like a lot of individuals who are unsheltered don't have telephones. They don't have means of communication. There are social workers who are attached to these individuals. There are housing organizations that are, working with these individuals to try to get them housed. And if you disrupt this encampment and we don't know where they're at, then they fall through the cracks.
And Alderperson Fuentes' plan is set to include 63 free apartments for people living in the encampment, as well as signing off 450 new affordable units in her ward. But as we know, advocates are still concerned. Tell us, why. You just mentioned some of the resources that people may not have access to.
Yes, and also, as far as I understand it, the number has been said to be 63, but I think it's less than that who have actually been housed. You have some people who have been connected to organizations that's going to work with them to find housing. But as of right now, they are not housed, and a lot of them were still in the encampment.
So what does that mean? Does that mean if they get connected to these organizations, that means they're still living outside?
Correct.
And why do you think keeping access to these public spaces is important?
Because we as service providers, speaking from a service provider perspective, we know where individuals are at. If someone is connected to a housing organization, then, we can go and, we know what tent they in, we know what area, we know individuals that are aware of these individuals and where they may be, and we can, find these individuals and make sure that they are connected to the services. You have mental health services being provided. You have, drug addiction services being provided to folks. If they are moved and, some of them don't go to shelters, which a lot of them don't want to do, then they are disconnected from those services.
Why, talking about that, why do you think that some people don't want to go to homeless shelters and rather, live in encampments outside?
Each individual has their own, personal reasons, but I know from speaking with individuals who prefer to live on the street, a lot of them don't like the rules and regulations that the shelters force them to comply with. A lot of them feel like shelters are pretty much a dead end. They go to a shelter and they are never connected to housing. A lot of them have been, victimized in certain ways while in shelters. It's just bad experiences for a lot of people that's living in shelters.
So in your opinion, you believe that the encampment in Humble Park should stay there?
Correct. I do. Yes.
Now, once again, we reached out to the Alderperson Fuentes office, and they provided us with a statement in part saying The solution to homelessness is not tents, it's housing. We've approved, we cut ribbons and broken ground on over 400 new affordable housing units in the ward. We're also working to open two non-congregant shelters with the blocks of Humboldt Park. Now, together, these efforts represent a deep and sustained commitment to addressing homelessness and housing insecurity in our ward. Lee, would you say that the alderperson solutions are moving in the right direction, you know, to solve the homelessness crisis? I know this has, I mean, something that we've talked about for decades in Chicago.
Yeah, 100% I do. I definitely applaud those efforts. But at the same time, closing down a space like permanently so that no one could ever access it again who may be experiencing homelessness is not the solution. And, you know, also it's not the solution for those who have yet to be connected to housing, who's there right now.
What areas do you feel still need to be addressed? You're out in the ground. You know, what do you want people to know?
I just think there needs to be more affordable housing. You know, there are a lot of people out here experiencing homelessness, and it's not that they don't want to be housed. They don't prefer to, you know, live on the street. They don't prefer to live in a shelter. They prefer to have their own space. And rent is just ridiculous these days, and a lot of people don't have jobs. A lot of people don't have, you know, jobs that pay enough for them to keep up with the amount of rent that's being demanded. So the only solution for it is creating more affordable housing.
And Ali, as we know, on January 1st, the city will decrease its overall shelter beds with, of course, as we know, bringing the One System initiative with the homeless, the people who aren't housed, and the asylum seekers. What do you think will be the result of that?
An increase amount of individuals who are unsheltered experiencing homelessness, that's a foregone conclusion.
And what is the Chicago Coalition to End Homelessness advocating for as alternative solutions to solve the unhoused crisis?
Affordable housing. They have to be a concerted effort to create affordable housing.
Ali, is there any personal stories that you can share with our audience?
In terms of individuals from the encampment?
Yes.
Yeah, I just feel like one person I'm working with, she's from the Humboldt Park community. She grew up there. Her mom stayed there. Her mom passed away, you know, while she was living there. This is the only community she knows. She don't feel safe in any other community. And right now she's connected to the possibility of being housed, but she is not housed yet, and she don't want to leave Humboldt Park.
Well, thank you, Ali. I appreciate you for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you all. I really appreciate it.
Up next, an investigation finds significant privacy violations in Chicago's migrant shelter system. Investigation unveils how Chicago's migrant shelter system mishandled asylum seekers' private information. The report comes from Borderless magazine and the investigative project on race and equity. They discovered the company that oversees the shelter system, Favorite Healthcare Staffing, has had federal complaints filed against them. Allegations say shelter staff use personal devices to access and share migrants' information without proper security measures, leading to potentially compromised data. Joining us is Emmeline Poser, a reporter with the Investigative Project on Race and Equity. Thank you for joining us. We also reached out to the Favorite Healthcare Staffing as well as the city, but we didn't hear back. Now, Emmeline, you worked on the report that exposed the mishandling of the migrant data. Tell us a little bit about what happened.
Right, so after we published a big investigation looking at complaints filed from the city's shelter system for migrants, We heard from two former contractors from the shelters who said that they had filed a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services about their concerns about potentially systematic mishandling of data in the shelters.
And is it normal for other shelters across the country, or is this really unusual?
Well, these contractors we had spoken with, they had spent years working in federal immigration facilities for unaccompanied migrant children. And they said that how sensitive data was handled in the shelters was very different from how they had experienced it in multiple different federal shelters, where there were encrypted spreadsheets and workers weren't permitted to bring laptops home or work from personal devices. So yes, it was quite different.
What would you say stood out to you the most, maybe that you were shocked about?
I think I was most shocked by the fact that, there really didn't seem to be controls on who could access this very sensitive data. We're talking medical information, immigration details, people's contact information and family members. And for there to be no limits on who can access or even modify these documents from their personal computers, that's just has huge implications.
You know, talking about that as a result of the poor management that you just spoke about and neglect, dozens of people became victims of extortion and threats and scams. How did that happen?
You know, it's unclear still, and hopefully we will get more clarity about how that happened. But for, these two contractors we spoke with, they've heard from 60 different current and former residents of the shelters who are as surprised as anyone else is to be receiving calls from Florida, demands for money to be paid into accounts and loan approval notices, things that they never initiated.
I can imagine when you get phone calls like that, you don't know if it's real or not.
Right.
Now, we talked to one of your piece's subjects, Reina Isabel Jerez Garcia, who talked about her experience at the Super 8 shelter. Let's listen to what she had to say.
Organización que se llama Musulmanes, en las cuales ellos dijeron que para el invierno no iban a dar unas chaquetas y no iban a dar un apoyo, pero nunca fue así, porque ellos trajeron las chaquetas y todo decían que era con Eduardo, todo con Eduardo. Y yo veía que de esas chaquetas que llegaron, ellos mismos se las llevaban a sus casas. ¿Sí? Eso me parecía injusto.
You know, she talks about some things that seemed unfair that were happening at the shelter that she was staying. What have you seen at these shelters? What was the quality like?
Yeah, so in our review of complaints filed from the shelters and in many interviews, we've heard across the city's shelters just a lot of confusion about the distribution of resources. That could be jackets or gift cards from local organizations. And more than anything, concerns about staff misconduct and poor conduct among staff members and inability to get any resolution to that or any sort of justice for poor conduct people have experienced.
She talks about feeling voiceless, and she also said that she filed complaints to the city and her shelter even threatened to kick her out. Let's hear all that part of the conversation.
Yo me convertí la enemiga número uno de ellos. Comenzaron a meter cosas tras cosas para poderme sacar. Me animo a decir esto porque de verdad tenemos que hablar. Tenemos que saber de que están haciendo las cosas mal.
What was your reaction when you started hearing that they were threatening people like Reina in the shelter to not speak out or take photos or video of what was happening?
To be quite honest, it wasn't a big surprise just because these shelters have been so obscured from public access, there hasn't been a lot of transparency. People have been really disappointed by that. I just want to say that, in speaking with now more than a dozen former shelter staff, that really hasn't been an experience limited to migrants staying in the shelters. Most of the staff we've interviewed have also said they feel fearful of speaking out internally or externally because of fears of retaliation, in their case, of being terminated from their jobs.
And through doing this work, this collaboration, what do you want people who are reading this to take away?
I really hope that we can encourage more transparency and accountability for the quality of care that the city and its contractors are providing in these shelters. There were some discussions of accountability earlier this year, but they didn't really lead anywhere substantial. And when we asked for more records of complaints from the city earlier this year, They declined to provide those records. And while we have appealed that decision, I think it's disappointing and concerning that they're not willing at this point to provide more records about what kinds of complaints people are filing from inside their shelters.
And talking about complaints, we know that Reina is among many who filed complaints against Favorite Healthcare Staffing. The city is, in fact, ending the contract with them at the beginning of the year. What would you say happens next?
That's hard to say. The city will be integrating 3,800, I believe, beds from the migrant shelter to create a unified shelter system. But I do believe we will continue to hear more voices from both migrants, staffers, advocates about the quality of care provided in these shelters and what people experience and what people feel needs to change.
Talking about accountability, do you think there will be accountability for the mistreatment of the asylum seekers?
That is unclear. I hope that people will seek accountability for themselves and for what they've experienced, but time will tell.
You think it's important? Like, was it a big deal that someone like Reina spoke out?
I think it's an enormous deal. I think people feel very vulnerable. They have asylum cases that will be ongoing for the next couple of years, and people have a lot of fear about speaking out about misconduct and harm they've experienced under their name. So I think it's a huge deal, and people are very brave to speak out about what they've experienced.
Well, thank you for being on and sharing this report.
Me.
Back with more right after this. Shop in the Back of the Yards neighborhood is bringing a vibrant twist to Mexican flavors. We sat down with the owners to hear about their mission to grow in their own community.
I think it's important to like pay respects to where we come from, but also like bring another element to like what we offer as well, because it's coming from our own experiences.
Brothers Andy and Freddy Granados own Grano Cafe y Pan in the Back of the Yards neighborhood. They say it combines Mexican flavors with their first-generation Chicago roots.
I want people to, when they come in, feel like this, like, refreshing, like, cool, new, like, take on, like, panaderias, you know, like, something new for the area.
Traditionally, panaderias, known as bakeries, offer a variety of baked goods for customers to grab and go. The brothers are adding their modern take by including a bakery in their cafe, where they make their own sweet bread.
Very staple items of like Mexican culture. When you think of like coffee and you think of like things that you put in your coffee, it's like we try to like, we're inspired by that. And then we're also trying to like kind of integrate like, I guess, like the American culture of coffee. So like we're doing like the pumpkin spice horchata. So like a big thing about this, about our space too, is like we're trying to do like a fusion. Even with our bread too, like he's working up some like really cool.
Yeah, so like with the bread, we're obviously doing the traditional like conchas, bolillos, teleras, but we're also doing like cake donuts, like red velvet cake donuts. And you don't see that in your typical panaderia. And like some of the donut glazes that we have here that we offer are like horchata glaze, which is really good. It's my favorite, yes. And then
They do the glazes in-house.
Yeah, in-house.
The brothers grew up in the neighborhood, where they now help run their family businesses. Their parents have owned a liquor and grocery store in the area since the 90s. When a space next to the store became available, the brothers seized the opportunity to open a coffee shop.
I know we're going to do it, and we just do it. I think that's like a big philosophy of my mom's too, is like, it's like, you know, just do it, you know, just like, exactly. I mean, that's been all over our lives, like, especially like going into business with my parents and like just figuring out all the financials, figuring everything out like by yourself.
Their mother, Emma Granados, says it was her father who inspired her to put down roots and start a business when they migrated to Chicago.
Siempre decía, hay que hacer algo aquí, hay que hacer un supermercado, hay que... Y empezamos, sí, claro, como madre, pues, yo pienso que he hecho, pues, un buen trabajo. Siempre darles el apoyo, más que nada, para que sigan.
The family says, thanks to city grants, they have since renovated their grocery and liquor stores and helped kickstart the coffee shop.
think there's a lot of community here and a strong sense of it that just not really represented. And I see that through my mom, who like knows generations of people coming into our grocery store and our liquor store as well. And it's something that I'm glad to be a part of.
The brothers say this move is providing them opportunities to grow in the neighborhood.
And at the same time, is like for people in the area, in our area, say I want them to feel comfortable when they come in. I want them to feel like, because we've been in the neighborhood for so long, it's just like, I feel like giving them this place, I feel like it makes them feel, we want them to feel very welcomed.
And Andy and Freddie say they're also looking to collaborate with local organizations and restaurants for future pop-up events. And I did get a chance to try their horchata glazed donut. It was a must-try, I have to tell you that. And that's our show for this Thursday night. Stay up to date with what our newsroom is working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And you can also stay connected by following us on Blue Sky at WTTW. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 7. Now, from all of us here in Chicago tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.